Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So the budget process in the city of New Orleans is starting. In fact, you can participate in a survey that you can send in if you go to the office of mayor and fill out the survey and let them know what you're thinking are the priorities should be from a budgetary standpoint. And the person that is sits on and I think chairs the budget committee for the city of New Orleans on the council is Joe Geruso, District A. He joins us. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, yes, that's correct. 157 more days for me.
Who's counting?
I am.
If, for those of you that don't know, Joe has retired from public service and is now back in the private sector as a practicing lawyer. And so he's counting the days, 150. You know, the last day that you're in office, Joe, is my birthday.
Oh, is it? Yes. I didn't know that. I thought you were going to tell me it's like buying a boat. The happiest day is when you get elected and the happiest day when you leave.
Yeah. So that's Sunday, January 11th, your last day is my birthday.
So. We'll celebrate.
So, absolutely. So, Joe, let's talk about this. We're going into the budget process for 2026. Obviously, 2025 was, I don't know if it was a rocky year or what it was, but at one point we thought we had a lot of money, and then at another point we were told, no, not so much, and then we were told we have a $73 million deficit. Do we?
Well, that remains to be seen. And the reason I say that is because the $73 million deficit is based on possible projections. So a couple of questions are arising. Number one is, will particularly our public safety agencies and police and fire, the ones with the highest, but DPW and safety and permits and others have overtime increases this year. What are we doing about that? How are we monitoring it? How much of it is related to January 1 and other affairs that could potentially be reimbursable? Noel, some other things that we're trying to do, and I want to actually give the administration some credit on this. We've had some things that were supposed to come out of the general fund, which is, for your listeners, the pot of money the city can spend how it wants to. We've moved some of those items over to the upcoming bond sale to free up some money. So that should free up some things. But really, and I think this is what you're going to want to talk about, there has to be two things the next mayor becomes focused on among all the other things they do with the budget, which is, number one, really have a long look at the expense side of the ledger. And some of that is, hey, we have probably some salaries that are too low, and we have probably some things that are too much. How do you implement some better processes, efficiencies, and making sure people are being served by what needs to happen? And then actually beginning as early as next week, we're going to have a budget committee meeting on the revenue side. And I tend to be more philosophically in the how can you look at revenue as opposed to cutting expenses for everything. And we're just going to have some conversations on some items. And the bottom line is there are things that have remained flat for a long period of time. Also with revenue, Noel, and I know this is one of your strong points, there's lots of things that we could and probably should be doing a better job of just collecting. And if we took care of that side of the house, we'd be in good shape. And look, we're going to take up some of the things that unfortunately have been the fights between the council and the mayor at this meeting, including, and I'm recused from this, but we're going to talk about it, the trash contract and saving money, how we can better maximize where we are with Wisner and getting more money, where we are with the school board settlement, taking that liability off of the books. where we are with other economic projects. So we have to start having the conversation now, and I would expect that to continue after the elections are over, and certainly with whoever the next mayor is.
How confident are you that you're actually going to get people's feelings about this? I mean, you know, it's always tough in the middle of an election year.
When
you start talking about cutting expenses, I mean, there's so many things outside of y'all's control of indebtedness that, you know, for example, the firefighters' pension fund. I mean, that's a sum certain that y'all have to contribute there. That's it's onerous, you know, and you have other examples like that, where there's really not much you can do. And the truth be told, unless there's some increase in those contributions, you never come out from under the eight ball, you know, and it continues to be actuarially challenged. And what that means, the net effect is y'all have to pay more money in. And meanwhile, I think year before last, they went for a benefit increase. I'm told they're thinking about doing it again this coming legislative session.
I would say two things. One, I think there are items hopefully most people can agree to. Your point's well taken. During the middle of elections is not the best time to have some of these tough conversations. But I do think you have to start setting the table for them. And maybe I'm being naive in saying this, but I tend to believe an executive is at the height of his or her powers at the beginning of their term. And so right. They're going to have to make some of these decisions. And look, here's another one. We'll, and I'm getting ready to put this out in my newsletter. Take the trash contracts. In 2021, the city ran about $1 million deficit in trash. This year, we're going to run a $34 million deficit. You just can't continue down that road. So how do you work on that? What are the things that need to be done? Obviously, there is an answer to that, but that's something that's going to have to wait till later and is not a this moment issue. But you've got to start fleshing it out a little bit so that way, again, whoever is taking over is prepared to hit the ground running. And I think also we don't want them to feel as though I don't want them to feel, I don't think my colleagues feel the same way, that the cover is bare.
So the funding for the garbage pickup, I think in Jefferson we do it on the water bill. Is that how it's done for you guys for
same
garbage
thing.
Service?
Same thing.
Yeah, and so what you're saying is your expenses in 2025 are going to be $34 million greater than the revenue that you pull in for trash.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Total expenditure is a little over $71 million, and total revenue is about $37.5 million. So the delta is right about that $34 million number.
So who's making... The general fund is making up the difference?
General fund is making up the difference right now.
So if you have a $73 million deficit, you're almost certain to know that about half of it is right there in the garbage contract.
And here's the other thing, Noel. This isn't just this year. It's been since 2023. So this is, if you really add up, and again, I'm giving away the details of my newsletter that's coming out, but I think it's important. If you look at the deficit that we ran in 23, which was about $24 million, and 24, $27 million, and 34, that's about $86 million in 3 years the city has left on the table. And we can't just continue to look the other way. And you're right. If you're looking at, let's say, the deficit is anywhere between $70 and $90 million. Well, you know, roughly half of that, maybe a third, can be covered by catching up with expenses, and that's just a reality. But again, you're also right that politically, this moment is not the right time to do that. We have to get through the elections, and certainly get whoever wins thinking about what they want to do to handle that in the near future.
Well, I mean, the reality is the only way you can resolve that is higher fees. That's not going to go over well.
No, it won't go over well. It won't.
By the way, we're only picking up garbage once a week as opposed to twice.
Well, of course, that's the whole problem, is that everything got more expensive, and the fee hasn't changed since 2012. So the world has changed, but the fee hasn't changed. And look, I think everybody feels as though there's a story in the paper today about it, that the cost of living here, it's just everything is going up. And again, I think that's part of what the next council and the next mayor have to be focused on, is cost containment for residents and the delivery of services, because that's going to be the name of the game. I think people are willing to pay more for taxes and fees if they see and feel like the things are being fixed. But when streetlights aren't changed, when sidewalks aren't fixed, when potholes aren't maintained, when trash isn't picked up, that's when residents rightfully get upset.
Joe, I've said this a number of times, and not to put you on the spot, but I mean, you know, it's really about priorities. And you know, you guys fund and finance a lot of different programs out there, and people just really want the basic necessities, you know, and services taken care of in an efficient and effective way. And I don't know what has to change, but unless and until you get to the point where you're adequately financing garbage pickup, this, that, and everything else, why wouldn't we stop all of this other stuff? You know, grants for this one, grants over here, money for culture bearers, money for this one, money for that one, municipal ID. I mean, can we really afford to be involved in all of these activities? Because my sense is, and I probably know numbers better than most when it comes to financing government, you can't, and you won't, and you never will. So how do we get to the point where we make sure that we're not running a $34 million deficit in garbage?
You're right. You're going to have to look at everything. And again, I'm not running for mayor, so these are views from the cheap seats. But I think what you need to do is look at your budget. What are the things that have to be done? You have to have public safety, fire, police, EMS, DPW, sewage and water board, code enforcement. All of those things have to be done first and foremost. Secondly, I think realistically, as a result of the cuts at the federal and the state level, you then have to say there are going to be certain programs we're just not going to be able to do anymore because the money doesn't exist and we have other things that we have to take care of. And I actually had this conversation with the department head either this week or last week, which is part of what I think department heads are going to have to show in this environment is there actual return that's happening on this, or is this something we feel good about? And look, Newell, on money to other programming, with the council having settled with Tulane and Wisner and hopefully settling soon with LSU, we're going to take that money and put it towards what we've been doing with the funds, so that way we're not drawing from the general fund as much. So
yeah,
me,
but that's $8 million. It's $8 or $9 million a year. I mean, you got a $34 million.
And listen,
you got a $34 million deficit right here. So that's a drop in the bucket.
It is. But I think the bottom line is you have to align government expenses and revenues with what comes first. And look, I think it's one of the things that's frustrated me sometimes with the debate with the sheriff, which is, hey, we've given you a ton of money over the years, and not all the things that we've given money for have resulted in what we'd want to see, and we can't fix management problems. So that's also the other trick spot, is making sure we're funding things that they're well-run, they're well-maintained, and things are working. So, like, the sheriff, Noah, I think, is, what, $60 or $65 million out of the budget already. just for that one piece, which is an important public safety piece. We have to fund it. The jail has to be run correctly. We can't start the sheriff. But at the same time, you can't have people let out of jail on a clerical error either. That's not a money problem. That's a management issue.
Yeah, you know, I was reading this article about this debacle with records retention, you know, with the clerk's office. And there's this mindset that the budgets of these respective offices, that they're not responsible for the stuff that they create, you know, and it's kind of like we look to the city for a records retention solution. But you're an independently elected official, you know, you may not be a single reporting entity, but you have a budget. You have to work within the confines of that budget to figure out how you're going to handle records. And what happens is, you know, we end up where we are. But more problematic in that story, Joe, was the fact that the DPW director says they're still working out of FEMA trailers. This is, let's just say they were, you know, down and out for a year, 19 years later, and they're still in a trailer and they hadn't rehabbed their building yet.
It's unbelievable. And a little related to that point, look, we did something yesterday to put bonds, general obligation bonds, on the ballot in November. One of the things I had to maneuver to be part of the bond issuance is fixing Bel Air in my district, which I would argue from 10th Street to Old Hammond Highway is the single worst street from stem to stern. There's lots of bad streets, District A, I know about them, but I would say the long stretch is there. That's been since Hurricane Katrina, too. That's where the 17th Street Canal breach was, and we haven't fixed that yet. So it's again, to me, let's look at our priorities, and you almost have to look at it. I hate to use this analogy, but like a body. You've got to triage what the oldest things are, what are the things that have comorbidities, and how they contribute to the ultimate health, and that's what you got to focus on first.
Yeah, this is going to be a very interesting process for sure. And I think because of the federal government going through a process that they feel is necessary to go through the right size federal government and right size what they're actually financing and funding in order to deal with a $36 trillion debt, the trickle down effect to state and locals is you got to get out in front of it because those impacts. You need to figure out how you're going to quantify the cuts because they're coming. I mean, it's not a question of if, but it's a question of when. So, you know, a lot of getting off of the federal government payroll is going to happen.
It's going to happen. It means you got to get smarter. You got to have a money ball mindset about how you use your money going forward.
No doubt. No doubt at all. Joe DeRusso, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend. Truly appreciate time and insight, and best of luck to you.
Thanks. Take care, Neil.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, folks, you know, anytime there's politics involved, people always go to the extreme point of a lot of things that are talked about. Recently, we've talked about trying to bring more companies back and producing here in this country. And with that, there's developed this negative connotation if a company has an international identity. Well, an international identity typically for domestic corporations means that they have facilities here, but they also have them elsewhere. But that's probably a good thing. And here to talk to us about that is Tommy Fauché, president of Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas Association. He joins us frequently. Tommy, welcome back.
No, good to be with you. Thanks for having me back.
So, Tommy, I guess, you know, you guys, like a lot of other business folks, that get frustrated because we always end up going to the extreme, right? I mean, it's like we're stuck on stupid sometimes when we engage in these conversations. It's not an all or nothing, zero sum game. Two things can be true at the same time, right?
No, that's very much the case. I think when you look at, and I think you teed it up well, when we look at Louisiana's economy, we know a large part of that comes from its industrial base. The oil and gas sector, the petrochemical sector, all facilities that are connected to the world via global trade because of the tremendous assets we have here. This great Mississippi River, the infrastructure like Port of New Orleans, Port of South Louisiana, and others that have built around that infrastructure, our proximity to the coast, and all of the potential that lies offshore in the now Gulf of America. All of that exists, and the state is better because of the companies in those industries. And we're seeing a very concerted effort, I think, from a state perspective and from a national perspective, quite frankly, to see more of that investment. More investment by those companies that are here already, and then more investment from hopefully new players coming in and contributing and ultimately making the nation, and in our case, Louisiana, stronger economically.
There are some, and people have talked about this, there are some critical industries where we have a vested interest to make sure that we have an appropriate representation of the amount of business that's actually done domestically, right? And you happen to represent one of those, oil and gas. I mean, energy is homeland security.
Very much so. I think when you look at the oil and gas industry in Louisiana, one, I think it's important to note, remember the premise of the conversation here, oil and gas industry in Louisiana is some of the world's largest companies operating here and calling Louisiana home. And it is very much also made up of very Louisiana-based local family-owned companies as well. They work as one to make up this industry. And I think that's important because we need all of the above. We need the industry to be intertwined. We need the big businesses and all of the surrounding small companies and small businesses. When I think of a refinery, for example, you know, if you look at it kind of like the aircraft carrier, if you will, well, that's the big one in the fleet. But mm-hmm. At the end of the day, how many small businesses in our parishes exist because of the proximity to one of these large facilities, who are also not just large taxpayers, but are large employers? Our communities in Louisiana, in many ways, have evolved around a lot of our natural assets, which have led to economic opportunity. 306,000 people in the state are tied to the oil and gas industry. And, you know, that expands into petrochemicals and other manufacturing. Those jobs wouldn't be here without all of those different size companies, some of which are Louisiana-based, some of which just have a tremendous Louisiana presence.
Yeah, you know, we experienced that here, and you will recall the loss of Avondale Shipyards.
That's right.
You know, it was one of the first experiences for me as a young adult when they went by the wayside. I knew so many people that worked for companies that actually provided services to Avondale. And, you know, and I was a business major and thought I, you know, knew a little bit about cycles and how that worked. Little did I know, just as you described, the impact. And you don't realize it till it goes away, unfortunately, for most people. Do they connect that dot, like me, that, wow, this was devastating and likely never to recover. And I can probably say today we still haven't fully recovered from the closure of Avondale Shipyard.
I think you make a great point. And, you know, as you only have to go upriver from Avondale and you think of the size of many of the facilities that call it river parishes, you know, really that entire river corridor now with the LMG investments by Venture Global that go from the tip of the Mississippi River all the way to Baton Rouge, you see, you see facility after facility, company after company, that is part of the economic engine for those parishes and communities and for the region, and they're also then culturally part of the fabric, right? I think all of us, using the Avondale example, we all knew someone, may have even had someone in our family who worked at Avondale. You go into the river parishes, we all know someone or have someone in our family who work for, you know, Dow, Valero, Shell, you know, pick a company that locates on that river. It is part of the economic engine for all the reasons, you know, leading tax dollars, you know, leading property tax dollars, leading in salaries, but it's also part of the cultural fabric of those communities, the first to respond after hurricanes, those people who will step up when there is a local charitable need, a United Way that needs to be supported. These facilities and you know, to make the connection to kind of the larger world we're working in these days, you know, these facilities are successful because they can locate here and they do tremendous work for Louisiana. But they have to be able to access global markets. And so back to one of your original points, we have to support companies that are U.S.-based but operate around the world, the large multinationals, of which my industry obviously, you know, contains several. So we think of Chevron and Exxon and companies who are working literally in every corner of the globe. We have to welcome them, and we have to create opportunities for the products they make here, the energy that they produce here, to service that global market. And it's that connectivity to the world that ultimately allows them to continue to invest more here at home. I tell people all the time, you know, Louisiana has some of the largest companies in the world operating here at home. And yes, they are a global brand. But when you think about the actual facilities, think about the way we label some of them, Newell. You have Shell Norco, Valero St. Charles, Exxon Baton Rouge Refinery. Their location is important because at the end of the day, the people who work in those plants, who work in those refineries, who go offshore to work on the rigs, they're Louisiana people first. They're taking the dollars that they earn home every day to raise their families in Louisiana, to make their communities stronger. That's extremely important. And I think that is the connection, if I had to leave the audience on this Friday with something. Remember, our connectivity to the world allows us to invest in Louisiana people and make the community stronger. It's not a bad thing to be a multinational company located in a state like Louisiana. Louisiana is better for it.
What do you, Tommy, we're visiting with Tommy Fauché, president of Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas Association. What do you attribute, you know, the rhetoric around this issue where there is this negative connotation? I mean, you know, there's a lot of companies that have been, over the last decade, attempting to locate themselves along the Mississippi River. And a lot of the locals come right out and say, wow, it's not a U.S.-based company or it's a multinational company. They have more interest in other places than here. But what's driving that mindset, do you believe?
You know, that's a fantastic question. I think it's a couple things. One, I think we need to understand that there is a national and global anti-industry movement at the outset. There are people who just don't want to see manufacturing facilities, refineries, more oil and gas, fossil fuel production. We have that around the world. We are not immune from that in the United States or Louisiana. And so we know that those people are automatically going to be against everything we do. I think for them, they use the talking point, trying to sow seeds of dissension in local communities, like our communities, by saying or trying to create some type of manufacture, some type of animosity or fear between the people who live on the ground, you know, everyday Louisianans, and trying to act as if those people who are connected globally are somehow looking out for different interests. And I think this anti-industry movement has played upon, by using some of those talking points, played upon some of the, you know, the lack of understanding of the industry. And, you know, I spend a lot of time and want to spend a lot of time introducing the industry to people. I tell them all the time, you know, I first person in my family to go to college. My dad, both of my grandfathers, retirees of industry. These were shift work guys. You know, one ran a warehouse. The other one was helping produce power for the plant. The other one was, you know, very much in operations. You know, multiple generations of my family, just like hundreds of other and thousands of other Louisiana families, are better because the jobs that, you know, my family had in the industry, that they were able to, by the way, have those jobs. They were able to retire, raise their families. They were able to do those jobs safely. They were able to do all of that because of the existence of the companies. And when you have people who are, quite frankly, not even always located in Louisiana, trying to tell Louisiana communities, you should want this industry. You should not want that industry. It's really a disingenuous movement, because at the end of the day, a lot of these people, you know, whether they live on the East Coast or the West Coast or nowhere close to the Gulf Coast, they don't know what's best for Louisiana. They don't understand our community. They don't understand that industry and parishes coexist. And a lot of the success we see in our public schools and our sheriff's offices and fire departments ultimately comes because of those investments. And so I do. I think the movement to be, you know, we talk about American energy dominance. We talk about America first and wanting more American investment. We absolutely are champions for that. But we know that investment comes by our ability to connect to and export to the world. And, you know, when we have those larger conversations, Newell, about port projects and port investments and, you know, rail lines and making sure we're investing in highway infrastructure, we're doing it to create the conditions to allow us to have this sweet spot that Louisiana has to connect to the world. And my hope is that as we just continue to talk about how important the industry is, yes, from an economic perspective, but very much in a very real, familiar way to families and to communities, that it will start to push back on those people who, quite frankly, have never even been to Louisiana, much less know what is best when it comes to, you know, oil and gas investment.
Even then, though, we have issues with, you know, the NIMBYs, not in my backyard, approached many people here thinking that they can hold on and maintain status quo. And as prices rise, things change. Status quo doesn't generate enough revenue to enjoy the life that you have and the community that you enjoy at the present time. You always have to have some growth factor built in, right?
We are stronger, and if we don't innovate and look for those global markets, we will never keep up with the demands that you and I and our kids and grandkids all have for the future.
No doubt. No doubt, for sure. Tommy Fauché, President, Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas Association. Thank you so much for your time, your insight. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, Noam.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with
me. Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So folks, last week we gave away tickets to the Saints' first preseason home game against Jacksonville, and congratulations to Victor Whitaker of Mandeville for winning the Generac GP6500 portable generator valued at almost $1,000. So you actually win things, right? We have these contests, you win. So you can now win some tickets to the Saints' battle against Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos on Saturday, August 23rd in the Caesars Superdome. You can score two premium tickets to the game. Entering is a breeze. Go to WWL.com/contest for your shot at a pair of tickets. Remember, you can enter once per day. Win tickets to the Saints preseason showdown against the Broncos from Saints Radio and WWL. And also, next week, Craig's is going to have another offer relative to another generator opportunity for you as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. We'll check in on what's happening out there on the West Coast. The Saints are now practicing in Irvine, and we'll find out more about that. And they take on the Chargers this Sunday at 3:05 p.m., Sunday, August the 10th. You can catch that right here on WWL. And also on the back in the back half, we'll talk to Bill Healy, head of the Red Dress Run, and he's a spokesman for them. We'll talk about the Red Dress Run, and they've got some changes, some modifications this year, and we'll visit with him as well. And we'll go to the talk lines. We'd love to hear from you on No Filter Friday. Talk about whatever it is that you desire to talk about. So. Got some great guests headed your way, so stay with us. We will be right back in just a few moments. This is Newell on WWL.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.